Good evening, everyone. This is Terry Brown. I'm the co-host of the Winfrey Monday Night Show. And welcome to everyone this holiday, this 2011, day after Christmas. We're doing the show from Sedona. Wynn and I are in Sedona, and Wynn is out rounding up the conference call line, and he should be in a minute with the people on the conference call line. So far, we've continued to do all the shows, even though it's holidays. Any day we're available, we always do the show. I don't think we've missed any shows in about 3 years, and that's how long we've been doing it, roughly since, I guess it's even longer, 2007. BBS Archives has a record of all of our shows, and they have the audio up, and we're in the process of getting them transcripts. And so eventually it will have transcripts for many of our calls. Connie has been transcribing our Monday night calls, and we have been putting them up on www.thespiritchannel.net. So it's not a very well-organized site, but as we get them out, we put them up. So they're sort of in a date order. We have audios up there for our Sunday grid healings, our Wednesday question and answers, and our Monday calls. Wynn records Monday night. He gets on, he records it and also, and we put it up on thespiritchannel.net. So welcome all people out there in BS Radio Land.
We're all listening.
A breath. You're here?
We've been listening, yeah.
Wonderful. Welcome to, ladies and gentlemen, Winfrey.
And we have the conference line on.
Hello, conference line.
Hello, Terry.
Hello, Terry. I love you, baby.
Hi, everybody. Hi.
You know, every so often I get an email, and somebody says, why do you say the same things so often when we start these calls? And, you know, we talk about group souls, you know, introduce the idea of the communication that we're doing, and kind of give a criteria. And
all callers are muted and they can unmute themselves.
And there's something about what we're doing that people may take for granted. But we're doing this publicly. We're doing this where anyone can be on the call. And another way of doing it is doing it privately. And when you do it privately, you have a group of people, and that new people have to go through a criteria to get with the old people. And maybe you have to charge people for what you're doing. And you become a teacher and you teach people things and they stay with you. And as people grow, there's no one ever new on. And if there's someone new, it's because they went through some kind of initiatory process before they got into with the people that were old. Now, in truth of the matter, new people that come in and pay attention to us are not necessarily less advanced than the people that have been on the line for 3 years. They may be more advanced. They may be more advanced than me. I don't think of myself as being advanced. I think of myself in the middle of a circumstance, trying to do the highest service with the experiences that have come to me. But I look at other people, and they say, geez, they look more together than I do. So, you know, this is a doing this publicly has certain requisites to it, and doing it in this, with a small select group and creating the illusion of advancement. I remember one point in my life I was in a group that I actually learned quite a bit from the teacher. And he did have, he called them initiations. And he had a number of initiations, and that when you got to a certain point, he would say, you're now initiated to this level, to the next level, to the next level. And, you know, it created a hierarchy in the group, because there were people that were higher in the initiation thing, and new people would always have to start at the beginning. And I wouldn't say that was negative or wrong, because one of the things about human nature is that we like to attain things. We like to think we're growing. We like to think we're advancing. And if you fit into an external grading system, then you seem to have some kind of, how would I say it, milestone, so to speak, of your advancement. I mean, this doesn't just work with spiritual things. It works with education. I mean, if somebody is a PhD, you will treat them differently, because even I'll end up doing that. If somebody is going through all those years of college, you'll think of them in a hierarchical way, in spite of the fact that you may be smarter than them and you may be wiser than them, but you don't have any way to prove anything except by how you present yourself, and they have a certificate on the wall. So, in the law of one, there's only one energy. There's no hierarchy. There's people that have certain talents. We're not all equal in our talents. There's certain people that are working through greater distortions or hang-ups. And when you see them when they're in the middle of working through those things, they may seem really inferior. And then they get through them, and they suddenly are soaring like an eagle. And the same person, but it was just maybe 2 years difference, and they went through a lot of changes. So how do we create a hierarchy? It's not real. It's an illusion. It's all an illusion, but anything that's hierarchical, if there's a channeling that comes out, if somebody says, this is Archangel Michael, then immediately, or this is Jesus, immediately it's like there's a PhD on the other end of the channeling line. And people tend to believe it, in spite of the fact, as we have learned, as I have learned personally, that a voice that comes through in a channeling could be anybody, no matter who they say they are. There's no guarantee, because somebody says a certain name, that they are that. There's no guarantee that because we have a source that says they're the Elohim, they are that. But if you've followed the track of our questions over many, many months and even years, you'll look for their perspective. You'll look for their consistency. You'll look for their love. You'll look for their wisdom. And you look for it over and over again. And after a certain point, when you listen to all that, you have to ask yourself, could a negative force mimic that? And I said, I don't think so. It's too consistent, it's too loving, and of course, not only what they say, but so often on these calls, we tap into this energy flow, and we feel this great energy, which I'm not producing, and it's very loving energy, and I don't think a negative source could produce that energy. So, we never want to give up our power to our sources. And when you have the most positive of sources, they never ask that. They are always honoring your free will, your self-empowerment, and they support you in what you want to become. It's not like deferring to them. So when I start talking and I tell the story, and I feel new people on the line, I always feel at the beginning of these calls, the person who's listening for the first time is far more important. Not important in a hierarchical sense, important that I address them, than the people that are coming in all the time. Because the people that are coming in all the time have learned to get value from this work. They know it has value, and I don't have to prove it to them. It stands on its own. But the person who's listening for the first time does not know it has value. Some people listen to the transcripts and read the transcripts, but I never know. I never know. So I take the point of view that I have to make sure I say something to include that person. And I think in my mind that this is a chance for some people. The work we're doing is a chance to perhaps change their path, to work out some of their negative patterns, to feel a connection with higher sources, to access that quality of grace. But how do they know that they should be interested? They need someone to notice them at the beginning of the call and ramp them up to speed. So when you hear me say these same things over and over again at the beginnings of the call, then please excuse me and be patient, because if you know that there's value on these calls, you know, it won't be that long till we get to that value. And if you're truly understanding, you'll be holding the energy at the beginning of a call so that we have a stronger energy and whoever is new has an opportunity to feel that energy when it's there instead of me rushing through things. Also, that in this preamble, always, we start to create a group energy. We start to create affinity. And then if we start channeling, if we start bringing through higher messages, it's the affinity of the loving energy that we create that protects the space. So it really doesn't matter what I say, as long as that comes in. So that they've said this in the channelings, and I've internalized it. I believe it's true that when you have a truly loving space, the negative can't get through that. It can't, because they'd have to convert to be in that space. So they'll just go away somewhere else. They look for places where there's holes, where there's distortions, where there's weaknesses, where there's ego, where there's people that are attached to attention. And they can't get through a loving energy. So that's part of what we're doing the beginning of the calls, creating and evoking a loving energy. So the topic tonight is, what are you going to do next? What's your next step? And I thought that's a great topic because it applies to every single person. Each of us has something to do which would move us into the next realm of possibilities for us. And oftentimes we don't do it. Oftentimes we don't know what it is. Maybe what it is to do nothing for a while. That may be the right next step. But for many of us, there is something we can do to speed up our evolution, to create more love in the people around us, to make more money. You know, probably not just one thing. There's more than one thing to do next. But when you look at your life, then it's a constant re-evaluation. I know that for me, doing this work we're doing on these calls, and in general, there was a point where I had no idea what to do next. I didn't know what to do. And I asked them, I said, can you recommend what I'm supposed to do here? And they just thought that they know what I'm supposed to do. I mean, they're big. They're wise. They're overseeing everything. And that, Jesus, tell me what to do. I'll go do it. And I began to learn that that's not the way that things change in this realm, following orders. That turns them into generals, so to speak. And I'm a soldier, and that's not what they want to do. It's a co-creative action. It's me, them, Terry, and you. We're on a team. We're on an energy team that is changing all the time. And every time we come on these calls, if you notice, they're always different. There's a different energy on the call, and sometimes it's just really funny, sometimes it's really holy, and everywhere in between. And God knows I'm not doing that. And they're not doing that. We're doing that. That's part of the group. You know, there's times when there's things that we have to release, and we have to get really corny and funny to release them. At least that's how I see it. And then there's times when things are really clear and it's very sacred. And for me, it's been like walking across a bunch of rocks on the river. But you don't see the next rock till you're on the rock just before it. And so what do you do? What's your next step? Is a lifelong question. It's an everyday question, because if you take a step, you end up on a rock. Until you end up on that rock, you can't take your next step, and you're not sure where it's going to be. And sometimes, this is my experience, when you take a next step and you end up on a rock, you find out, geez, this rock is pretty shaky. I don't know if I want to stand here. And so you got to think quick, and either you just quick get off it and go to another rock in front of it, or you go backwards and go back to the rock you came from and look for another rock that maybe might be more stable. So when you take these next steps, there's a thing to realize that you might make a mistake. And what you think is your next step wasn't a good next step. And do you leave room to step backwards, or do you get stuck? For example, I mean, a good analogy to this is you might have a young man who firmly believes his next step is a wonderful romantic relationship. And when he finds out to have this wonderful romantic relationship, he has to get married. Now, you've taken a step that's not easy to step back from. And perhaps he needed a really long courtship to make sure this was the right person. I don't know if people do long courtships anymore, but whatever they do, before they end up making a big commitment, it's good to make small commitments for a next step. Things that, realizing that many things don't work. And just because you're taking a next step, and it's always commendable that you're taking a next step, whether it works or not. I'm sure you've heard all the people who have said how many times their book got rejected before it got published. I remember Jack Canfield, who wrote Chicken Soup for the Soul. His book got rejected 150 times. And probably finally became the all-time best series. And it's not just one book anymore. Probably sold in the tens of millions, 100 million Chicken Soup for the Soul series. So he kept taking the next step. And you know what? When they got the book published, he and his partner, let me see, I can't remember his name, but he wrote that with another person. He and the other person realized that just because the book was published doesn't meant they were going to sell it. So the two of them got on a telephone campaign, and they just spent all day for 6 months or a year calling every radio station all over the United States, getting on every interview, small stations, big stations, whatever. And they grounded the energy in doing that, so their book became a huge success. So when we look back and think, oh, my God, he's selling 100 million books, you have to remember there was a day when Jack Canfield got up and no one wanted to publish a book. And then after 140 publishers, he found a publisher. And once the book was published, he realized if anyone was going to read it, it was because he told them about it. So it's a good example of getting something done and somebody that kept taking the next step, the next step. I faced with that every day. I've come to the conclusion that this work we're doing is important, and it reaches people, and it touches them, and it changes people's lives. And so, at one point, it was like there was not a single person that was being influenced by anything we're doing, and I was waking up, and somebody was shaking my shoulder and telling me, those guys want to talk to you again, and I thought this was the craziest thing I could ever imagine, and certainly nobody was embracing what was happening for me and saying, wow, congratulations, wonderful, it's changing my life. So it was not an automatic thing to figure out how this thing works. Now I have some idea of how it works, and I'm compelled, whatever, to say, what is the next step I have to take so that this reaches more people, so that this becomes something that can impact many more people than it's impacting now? And I don't think that because of ambition. I think it because it's the next step of service. And then when that happens, there'll be another step, and then another step, and another step. And I think Once you embrace this idea of what's the next step, then you start on a flow. There's really no end point to it. Now, there can be an end point because you can say, God, I have now $100 million in the bank. I was Jack Canfield. He says, well, now my next step is to talk to people, encourage them, spend time with my family, travel around the world, give lectures. You see, we are each creating our life. There's no supposed to be. There's no meant to be. It's your creation, and you have to figure it out. But it can be figured out. And I think this is a good moment to bring our sources in and have a discussion with them about how to figure out your next step. And no matter whether your life is very simple and you have a job and a family, or your life is very complex, or you're a celebrity, or you're influencing people in a spiritual way, whatever, each of us has something to do we're not doing. And sometimes we avoid the very thing that will be our next step. So, Terry, are you on the line?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, do you know what your next step is?
My next step? I have several next steps. There's the immediate next step, and then there's the priorities for the getting out of the product to people that order, and then there's the next thing would be the transcriptions and getting them out, and then all of but that would be progressing in my knowledge of all that is.
Terry was sitting in the living room yesterday, and she said, you know what I thought I realized? She says, I think I'm always in spirit. I'm not here.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very interesting because I think someone goes through a lot of lifetimes like that, and the world passes them by. It's like, you don't even know you're like that. You just think you're a misfit, and you don't fit in. And then something happens in a given life where you kind of trip and stumble, and you're in a situation where all those higher aspects of yourself have an opportunity to manifest. Because, as I see it, with the positive forces, just because somebody has this propensity to be a chattel, a messenger for those realms, it doesn't mean they do that every life. They may only do it very, very occasionally because it takes the right circumstance to trigger it. Like, I suspect, I'm just reverse engineering here, if Terry was, say, Catherine, and I should say that calling somebody a former saint is not necessarily a hierarchical thing, although people will think of it that way. But let's just look at it. You know, we know that churches are corrupted. We know the power structures are corrupted. Sainthood is not something that is extended by higher forces. It's extended by a church. They say, let's declare that this person is a saint. And so the truth of the matter is you probably have this bumbly little woman. I think she was 15 years old or something, who ended up at a church And there were probably some highly intended people in that church. And somebody said something, and the higher forces said, this might be a good time to get a message through. She has the talent. And suddenly the energy was put in, and she'd be talking. And they wrote it down. And if you read, say, Catherine, you'll find a lot of it has to do with the voice speaking through, say, Catherine, talking about the hypocrisy in the church. And then what happens is the very same church that has hypocrisy in it at its higher level declares her faith. Okay. Now that doesn't, Jerry is still the same bubbly person. Okay? And having had that declaration after she was dead, didn't change her. Then she just stumbled into another situation this lifetime where there was an opportunity for her to exercise this talent of breathing through messages from other realms. And I'm talking about her, and she's on the line. To give her a chance to correct me, because she might have a different way of looking at it.
Well, you know, it's funny because it's like when I look back at the history, I just went on my track, and I didn't know that they had declared me a saint. And I just went on and had some more lifetimes, and some of them were failures. And
bad marriages, people killing you, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, it's like I was a writer in Paris, and I was getting quite famous, and the revolution came along and decided that I was, that all my books needed to be burned and I needed to be beheaded. And so I had a few failures like that.
I mean, truthfully, the reason I talk, and Gary graciously allows this, the reason I talk about St. Catherine of Siena is because it's a way to get people to pay attention to our work and be curious, because the story is over, just as the Edgar Casey David Wilcock story is such a good way to get people to pay attention to my work and David's work at present time. Open the door so people pay attention. It's hard to get attention in this realm. It's really hard. And so they know that. So they take the advantage of the circumstances to create situations so people will pay attention. And I carefully tested that to see how people would respond if I put that out to the public. And, you know, I was a couple of past lives, and I don't like to talk about my past lives. You know, I'm afraid all the time. You know, it's easier to talk about Terry's past lives than my own, particularly because I'm the center of attention of holding this together right now. And I have enough problems than saying I was this person or that person. Although, if you come to one of my small workshops, I'll let you know. It's comfortable. But there's pictures and all this stuff tying me to people that I don't think would be, purposeful to put it out. But it is purposeful to put Terry out, because Terry doesn't have any ego about it. So it's just like using that story so that people will look at our stuff and it gives some credibility, make somebody curious. So on that note, I'm going to call in the light, which is already
here. What's the topic for tonight?
The topic is, what's your next step?
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think people get stuck. And when you get stuck, it's hard to do something. You have to shake yourself a little bit and looking at how to figure out what your next step is, and whatever questions come up on that topic, okay?
Okay.
So, Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround, protect each person on this line, and any negativity, we take it to the higher realms of light, transmuted to the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe, through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of Earth, through our bodies, into the center of the Earth. And right now we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the law of one, to join with us, create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. Before we start, let's just take a moment of silence and hold the space. Okay, and I'll turn it over to our sources to address our questions tonight.
We greet you in the love light of one infinite creator. This is the 26th of December, 2011. And we look at planet Earth, and we make connection. And we see people in the holiday mood, but getting back to their routine to start the coming week and the new year. And we see the light cycle beginning to get a little longer in the northern hemisphere every day. And we send love and light to each person who is listening. Each person who will read a transcript and each person who will listen to an audio or listen on the replay line. We are cognizant of your topic. What is my next step? We are in a different relationship to energy than one who is in the third dimension. We are in the relationship of no time. And all the time in the world, we can move into what appears to be the next priority, or we can appear and we can assist others when they are looking at the next challenge, the next hurdle, the next thing that is in front of them. The thing that is right in front of you. That can be your next step to handle. There are things that are presented to you things that need to be done immediately. Obtaining firewood for the fire and getting warm. Obtaining a living to pay for the necessities of life. These are priorities that need to be done to continue the sustenance in the third dimension. Then there are situations with people, the argument with the Uncle Fred that is bothering one, and one wishes it could be resolved. And communication issues with individuals to work out differences, conflicts, to make one's path easier. And this contains opportunities for growth and for opportunities for non-judgment and for connection with individuals. And particularly at this time of year, connection with family, connection with relatives, sending them hugs, sending them love light. At some place, even when you don't do it in the physical, but when you do it in your mind to some degree, it transfers to them. And you might find yourself back in communication with them as they may attempt to contact you. Dissolving of old issues through communication or through setting it aside and sending the other person a loving greeting. Those are initial comments. Do you have questions?
Yes. The person is in a stuck place in their life. What can they, what kind of procedure can they apply to themselves, self-talk, self-questions, to figure out what would be an appropriate next step? Because this covers a wide variety of possible next steps, from anywhere from spiritual advancement to earning a living.
There are categories here. There is the category of things of immediacy, things that must be done to continue one's life path. The shoveling of the snow out of the driveway so you can get out. The preparing of something to eat so you have the energy to sustain yourself. The keeping warm, things that directly affect your survival. These are immediate things, and one can use communication to communicate one's situation to people that can help, to communicate one's availability if one needs a job, to enlist the help of neighbors if one cannot do everything oneself, to get acquainted with other people, and in bonding, one can find support and can help each other. So this is one category of things that is of an immediate nature. Another category of things is growth. How does one wish to proceed in their life? What path do they wish to choose after their needs are taken care of? Which path do they wish to go on? Do they have a desire sometimes to play the piano? Can they go down to their church and sometimes play? Or do they have a desire to do research? They could go to the library and find a wealth of information on the internet, and the librarian can show them how to get on the internet and how to use this resource. Finding one's interest and then researching that particular interest on the internet can give them a wide variety of ideas they might not have thought of. Those are a couple of our ideas.
Thank you. You know, something that I have used a lot, in fact, Gary has picked it up, is the internet. And when you get into kind of an open space, you're dealing with such a huge world of stuff. And you can almost ask any question, and you'll find whole bunches of things come up. Like, you should try it. Just ask a question like, who has a job in Poughkeepsie, New York? Looking for health company. Look at things you're interested in. And it's like, let's suppose you're looking for a job. Instead of going door to door, it's like start browsing the internet. And then look at the company. Then look at the owners of the company. And look at how they present their website. And see if you can say to yourself, I like that company. And then go knock on their door and say, you know, you have to be real on this, though. I was looking at the internet. I really like this company, and I was wondering if there's somebody to talk to about a job. This is the kind of company I'd like to work for. And you would be surprised how many things you can find that you didn't know were there without using the internet like that. And it's a resource that I think is underused by people who are needing something. Because when you, instead of asking somebody to like you, am I good enough, you're now going through the internet and you're taking the masterful position of, do I like you? And just because you're needy doesn't mean you can't do that. And if you want to work for somebody that you like, now you can find them. Never before in history was that possible. You know, you have the owners of the company with their pictures, talking about themselves, their company mission, and you could say, I like that. And I will guarantee, if you can say that to yourself, if you can say, I like that, then you do that for 10 or 20 companies, you'll get a job. Because people will like you because you like them. But it has to be authentic. So they can go on the Internet and do it. So maybe the next step is to go on the Internet. And I know a lot of people who are finding romantic partners on the Internet. There are so many dating services and this and that, and people put their pictures up, they talk about themselves, you can read about people, and so what if you get rejected? Get rejected 49 times. Remember, Chicken Soup for the Soul got rejected 150 times. Did those guys worry? No. They kept going until they got it. So once you get over the fear of rejection, it's like it's not such a big deal to keep putting yourself out there. And next step, how about spiritual evolution? I'm stuck spiritually. I'm stuck socially. I'm stuck in my business. What is a person? How can a person qualify their own thought? If they say, you know, I think this would be a good next step, what process can they run to get some validation from spirit that, in fact, it is a good next step?
We were thinking of communication, communication to spirit, asking spirit for synchronicities, asking spirit for some kind of suggestion of what direction they need to go, and seeing what comes to them, and keeping the intention really high and focused, and keeping your integrity, and being open to different opportunities that come in communicating to people, asking people what their thoughts are on the subject, and then getting familiar what different areas are like to be in and doing. Getting an idea if you yourself would fit into that area. You can get on the Internet and get stories about different areas, like being a shoemaker. What's it like to be a shoemaker? Talk to shoemakers. There's some tremendous success stories with like a shoemaker comes over without his family and sets up a little shop and starts doing shoes and does a really good job. And it's not a very large shop, but he turns his shoes over very fast and he does a very, very good job. And then his shoe shop expands. And soon he has enough money to bring his family over, and he's becoming more and more popular, and then he's doubling the size of his shoe shop, and he's hiring people to work in his shoe shop. Things start and progress one thing at a time and build. As you build one layer, then another layer can be built on top of that, like the people that he had interested in getting their shoes repaired, then refer other people, and then he has a bigger customer base, and he has more and more business, and it builds upon itself. So, like, that's an example of how somebody could build a whole new life in an area of interest that they have. If somebody is spiritually wanting to expand and grow, they could start reading things in our work, in the channelings, and could, in the reading, connect with the higher frequencies and begin to see ways that they could expand and grow spiritually.
Question. We talk a lot about synchronicities, and I think there are some people that may not know what that means and have no idea what causes a synchronicity. So maybe we could get an understanding of what a synchronicity is and how to create circumstances in our life to have synchronicities.
Thank you. A synchronicity is an experience that seemingly may come out of nowhere, but it is where one is looking in a certain direction, focused on something, and then from another direction, something that answers that need or fulfills that call comes in seemingly like magic. But it is not like magic. It's that you had been on the frequency of that happening. And by being in the focus of that happening, in the focus of that desire, you have attracted an answer. You have attracted the thing that you were seeking. Because you were at the frequency of it, then you had gotten that desire fulfilled as something that you wanted of that frequency has matched your frequency and come into your life. If you were of the frequency of wishing, like desiring, and feeling that you were worthy of, and you were just in the frequency of winning a lottery, then you could attract that to yourself. But if you were trying to do it, this is way above trying. It just is. You just create it, and you're there. But if you think, oh, I can't win the lottery, it's like that's placed you at a whole different frequency from winning the lottery. And it would be very surprising if you won. But then you have situations where an individual walks into a store and thinks, oh, I feel lucky. I think I'll buy a ticket. I think I'll win the lottery today. And they feel like they might win, and then they win. Because they're at winning frequency. It's just like greasing the tracks. And it's making the possibility for the one occurrence to move into the sphere of the other.
Can a depressed person have a synchronicity?
A depressed person can have a synchronicity, and a synchronicity can also be negative. Like if a person was thinking, oh my, this terrible thing is, it's like things are really terrible, then they are at that frequency of things not going well, and they are bringing those things to them.
Can a depressed person have a positive synchronicity?
Pardon?
Can a depressed person have a positive synchronicity?
Yes, a depressed person could have a positive synchronicity, as it is not totally simplistic, and they may have somewhere in their life the cherished thought, or somewhere in their past life have the thing have been at one time in a certain frequency, and then bring that in spite of their depressed condition.
Thank you. You know what? I think it's time to close. Would we have moments of silence on these calls? I feel a lot of energy, and I've gotten emails from people that feel that energy. Could you share with us what happens when we're silent and we feel those energies?
You are in the space of allowing the energies to flow, and the energies are there, much like the radio station is there, even though you're not tuned into it. But when you turn on your radio and you tune to the station, then you hear it. So the energies are there in the silence. The energies are there, and you may tune into it and feel it.
So let's take a minute of silence and feel the energies.